Off the Ball Rugby.
Like him or loathe him, he's been great for the game. He brings in energy and I couldn't believe it. On Saturday night I came home, my son was wearing all white and he had like tape, like a Pollock hat around his legs. I was like, what's happening here?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
David Correll, FEI CEO. We're here at the launch of the FEI strategy plan for 2026 to 2029. Can you just put some maybe meat in the bones for fans, players, volunteers, parents, and what that all means?
Sure, yeah. Look, it's very exciting to be launching a new strategy. It's a new chapter for Irish football. We've entitled it Change the Game. The reason being, if we reflect honestly, we have been underperforming as a nation. That's, you know, understood by a lot of people, but it's actually the facts as well. UEFA evaluate every federation within their membership based on the size of their population, how many players they have in their country, how their teams are performing in European club competitions and international competitions, players, coaches, etc. And sadly, Irish football, out of the 55 federations, when you line them all up, is the third most underperforming nation. So something's not been working. And we've been conscious of that for a few years, and we've been slowly building towards this new strategy. We recently concluded a transformation program, which completely changed the shape of how the organization is set up. We've done that with this strategy in mind. So there's three pillars to the strategy. It involves, obviously, getting more kids playing. That is the key part, as we want to continue to develop player development. Facility development is the second pillar, which is an ongoing challenge in Ireland, sadly, with the weather that we have and the increase in demand. And the third one is around our League of Ireland academies and wanting to, I suppose, realise that really positive intervention by government of the investment that's come forward, but to crystallise that, improve the pathway and improve the fortunes of our international teams by virtue of it.
So, and just on that, and the third most underperforming nation in UEFA, it doesn't sound for positive reading. How do we change that going forward? What is the actual plan to kind of perform at the level that we should be at, or perform or outperform the level that that Ireland should be at?
Sure. Look, I don't want someone to walk away and have the impression that everything's broken. It's not. There's a lot of positive things happening. Our participation numbers are actually quite high. We've seen huge growth in the women's game, 79% increase in women's and girls registrations over the last three seasons. We've got a volunteer workforce that's hugely committed, really progressive. We've got a lot of the fundamentals in place, but for some reason they weren't clicking, and we as a federation have a part to play in that. So we've tried to make conscious decisions to try and enable the system to work better. We've developed, as part of the strategy, a view of the ecosystem and how all stakeholders in Irish football have a part to play, be that the association, our affiliates, leagues, clubs, government. And we want to work with everyone to make sure that Irish football comes together, moves in the right direction and lifts all boats ultimately.
Yeah, sorry. In the report it says 74% of the ambitions were met from the 2022 to 2025 plan. What is constitute a positive increase in that for the next three-year plan?
Yeah, I've been consistent. You know, we have been committed to providing updates on our strategy progress over the last 4 years, and every 6 months we deliver that. And I've been consistent in maintaining that that's a good score. I am very, very conscious. It was a hugely ambitious strategy, as is this one. And our resources are not endless. So we need to make difficult decisions and make priorities throughout the 4 years. But I feel we did well in the last cycle. I hope we can surpass that 74% with this coming one. But even in that realm, you know, that's still like an A or a B plus. So we're doing pretty well. And I think honestly, over the last cycle, we've seen huge progress on and off the pitch. And hopefully come 29, we'll have kicked on again.
You also mentioned building a self-sustaining ecosystem for the future of Irish football. What does that look like? Does that look like producing players for the elite national teams, having a football industry within the country? Is that what the thought process is behind that?
So I think the self-sustaining one is more around the League of Ireland, mm-hmm. and having the league itself be a self-sustaining industry The ecosystem is more broad, and obviously it is all the component parts. But if you're asking about the self-sustaining element, we're focused on the League of Ireland, and obviously the investment from government that was committed in the most recent budget round is a huge boost of confidence. The league has been going from strength to strength. You know, we've realized 1 million people through the turnstiles last year. Our broadcast coverage is through the roof, courtesy as well of your support on Off the Ball. Our sponsorship revenues continue to climb. So the league is performing really strongly. Can it get better? Of course. And it's our job as custodians of the league to work with the clubs to try and build that platform and help the league to be truly self-sustaining. And the academies is a key part of that, because if they have the right talent, the product improves, transfer values improve, and it goes back into the system again.
You obviously want kind of everybody singing off the same hymn sheet. You want maybe to improve the atmosphere between, you know, schoolboy football, grassroots football, League of Ireland football within the FEI. How do you go about doing that? Because it has been maybe a fractured relationship in the past.
It has, but, you know, we have delivered a lot of positive things as well. And I think there's a huge amount of support for the Football Pathways plan in its entirety, like the broader piece. That's a 12-year vision that I know one element of it has, you know, come in for a degree of divisiveness. But the reality is that the broader plan is widely well received. So we want to continue to build on that. We now have a new director of football in John Martin, who is out extensively covering the country to try and build those relationships, and hopefully the combination of John and Shane and the rest of the team, we can further embed our relationships with every level of the game and make sure we're headed in the right direction.
You mentioned the Football Pathways plan. It might have been, maybe by us in the media and by other people, it might have been kind of maybe misinterpreted as summer football, but it isn't really. Can you just explain what you really mean by the Football Pathways plan and the aligned calendar?
Sure. So the Football Pathways Plan is a 12-year vision for Irish football. It is quite wide-ranging. It covers everything from women's and girls' football to playing formats to ensure that we have the right coverage across the country. So right now, if you live in one county, you might only get 20 weeks of football. If you live in another, you might get 40. So there's a massive disparity about how we're delivering. And it's unfair on those kids just based on a postcode that they're getting more opportunities than others. So there's an underlying base around participation. Then you can move as high up into kind of international and how we want to have a consistent philosophy of how we approach our development age groups that will obviously then culminate in when hopefully they put on the green shirt for the senior teams. That's called the green line. So that's just a sample of kind of the broader Football Pathways plan that I said has been really well received. But you referenced a line calendar, which is only one of 11 actions. So that one obviously has been well talked about over the last couple of years, and I was actually very intrigued to see it organically come back up, particularly on OTB in recent months, as the weather was so poor again through January and February.
Yeah.
Di Stefano. There's always tenor when he moves. And it's 7-2.
From the barrios of Buenos Aires to the roaring nights of Madrid, this episode traces the extraordinary journey of Alfredo Di Stefano, the visionary who redefined modern football. Born in Argentina, forged in the breakaway leagues of Colombia with Millonarios, and immortalized in Spain, he became the heartbeat of a dynasty. But what if the man they called La Saeta Rubia had taken a different path and gone to Real Madrid's biggest rivals, Barcelona? Find out on episode 6 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors podcast as to how European football could have been changed as we know it. Coming to you this Monday in your OTB football podcast feed for free.
On the Global Ireland Football Fund?
Global Ireland Football Foundation.
Foundation. What is that? You're trying to tap into the Irish diaspora abroad. What's the thought process behind that?
Sure. So if I go back to what the challenge is, we have identified that there's an 863 million need to ensure that Irish football facilities reach the level that we feel is requisite for a country of our stature. That's across grassroots, League of Ireland and international. The government have absolutely started to recognise that. They invested $112 million in 2024 alone, and the upcoming rounds of investment, we will hope to secure that and some again. The reality is, though, that we can't expect everything to come from government. We need to try and fend for ourselves. And that's where the concept of the Global Ireland Football Foundation was born, where we recognise there's a growing philanthropic market in Ireland, but also there's a very established one overseas. So we want to have, or we do have now, a separate entity with separate board that is tasked with going out to the Irish diaspora, both overseas and at home, to try and, I suppose, extol the virtues of investing into the game. What's the benefit that, you know, helping a grassroots club realise a pitch and the social impact it can have? And the intention is that over the coming 4 years, we will realise north of €15 million of investment flowing into the game, which, again, isn't going to shift the dial. We need government to really move, but we need to recognise we have a part to play as well.
I suppose the next big thing for Irish football fans is the game in Prague, but we're going to have the games against Israel in the autumn. Are Israeli fans going to travel to Dublin? Do we know anything? Because obviously you said that the game will be played here. So will Israeli fans be travelling to Dublin to support their team?
So in our conversations with the Israeli Federation, they've been clear from the outset that they do not expect any travelling fans. That was the same with the Norwegian game that recently took place the back end of last year. However, that doesn't mean there won't be any Israel supporters in the stands. That is something obviously we need to work through with the authorities. But the reality is, in Norway, there was local support groups, etc., that did come to support their team.
You said it was a divisive kind of subject last week or 2 weeks ago. Since then, there was the PFAI was surveyed. Over 60% of their members said that they weren't in favour of the games not going ahead. Fan groups were also surveyed about the games not going ahead. They also voted largely in favour of the games not going ahead. What if the players or some of the players or some of the coaches come to you and say, we don't feel like you're supporting us in our right to not play these games? Do you have maybe something to kind of discuss with the players and staff that if they don't want to play these games, that then they're not selected for the games?
So I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, this is still relatively fresh news, and all of the different stakeholders in the game are starting to have their say on it, which is completely understandable. We obviously did place a huge emphasis on our players, and we contacted quite a range of them to, I suppose, gauge their reaction to the situation and to outline the logic and reason for the association's decision to fulfill the games. And credit to the players, they said they would respect the decision. So that is something that we will obviously keep on watch and make sure that we support them. I've always been never had any opposition, I should say, from anyone finding their voice. So I take no objection to that. But based on what we know, what we understand from the broad sample that we have spoken to, they recognise and will respect the FAI decision.
Do you feel like government has maybe put you in a corner that you have to play these games to put a lot of pressure on, it seems?
No, absolutely not. I think, you know, obviously the FAI is in a challenging position, having to formalise our position on this. Our members made their position very clear, and we took that forward to UEFA at the back end of last year. UEFA have not taken action on that. The Government of Ireland have not got any sanctions with regards to the Israeli state, so the decision lies with the association, and therefore we look at it through the lens of football, and as outlined, it is within the best interests of Irish football to fulfil these games.
Conscription is something that exists in Israel. Many of those players that will be playing on the field here will have been in the IDF. Is that something that, you know, you've thought about as well?
I if I'm entirely honest, I don't know the squad. I don't know the background or history of the individuals, so I wouldn't feel appropriate to comment on it at this stage. We're still a number of months away from it. But equally, you know, I think we can address those questions as we get closer.
Brian Kerr spoke a few weeks ago about boycotts and games not going ahead. would the FAI maybe take a really tough decision and maybe some sort of leadership and be like, let's forgo the 6 points? Or is there pressure maybe from UEFA about the Euro 2028 games, or what's the story there?
Yeah, look, Brian, as ever, is very strong in his views and very eloquent in getting them across. We have to look at this in the round, and we have to look at it through the lens of what's in the interest of Irish football. And it's, you know, leadership requires difficult decisions, and not everyone will support the one that we've taken, but it is equally in its own right a difficult one. And it is in the interest of protecting the game and ensuring that we are able to protect the interests of not only of our men's national team, but everything that flows off the back of it. So no, this is a decision that we've taken with pure intentions. We are in these roles, the board and the executive, appointed to be custodians of Irish football, and that's what we're trying to do.
Do you feel pressure from UEFA as well to get the games played?
No, UEFA have not been overbearing on the topic. They recognise the depth of sentiment in this country. Obviously, it's very clear in their statutes that games have to be fulfilled, and there will be immediate repercussions if we don't, as I've outlined when I previously did media. But no, they understand we're in a challenging position. I have nothing further to add.
Have you spoken to the Kosovan FA or the Austrian FA?
Yes, spoken with my Austrian counterpart.
And had they said that they would play the games as well?
Yes, absolutely.